this morning will come from Psalm 124. Psalm 124. Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, let Israel now say, had it not been the Lord was on our side. When men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive. When their anger was kindled against us, then the waters would have engulfed us. The stream would have swept over our soul. Then the raging waters would have swept over our soul. Blessed be the Lord, who has not given us to be torn by their teeth. Our soul has escaped as a bird out of the snare of the trapper. The snare is broken, and we have escaped. Our health is in the name of the Lord, who made heaven and earth.
Good morning, everyone. If you would, go ahead and keep a finger there in Psalm 124. We're going to be speaking about that song this morning. Sure is good to see everyone here. I trust everyone had a great Thanksgiving and got their fill of physical food, and hope you're ready to be filled with some spiritual food, as I know we all are. That's why we're here. Good to see everybody back that's been traveling, and I know, as was already said this morning, we'll probably have a good many people coming back to fill this building this evening. Psalm 124. In the Old Testament, there were three major feasts that Jews were required to celebrate. There was the Passover feast, which was also incorporated the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and that was celebrated in the first month of the Jewish calendar. This was a feast intended to remind the Israelites of their salvation from Egypt when God rescued them from their physical bondage. And then there was the Feast of Tabernacles, also called the Feast of Booths, and that was celebrated in the seventh month of the Jewish calendar. That was a reminder of the booths or the tents that the Israelites used to live in while they were in the wilderness when God brought them out of Egypt. And then the third feast was Pentecost, and that's also called the Feast of Weeks or the Feast of the Harvest. And that was a feast celebrated 50 days after the wave offering of the Passover feast and celebrated at the end of the grain harvest. All three of these feasts are mentioned in Deuteronomy 16 and verse 16, and they were called pilgrimage feasts, meaning God designated that all of Israel gather to celebrate these feasts mentioned in Deuteronomy 16, 16 at their appointed times. This is the reason why we see so many Jews in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. There would have probably been an estimated over 2 million Jews in Jerusalem on that day. And while this large number of Jews were traveling from their homes upward to the mountain in Jerusalem, they would sing particular songs or psalms that were called the Songs of Ascent. We find these very psalms recorded for us in our Bibles in Psalm 120 through Psalm 134. And you'll notice in most of your Bibles that when you look at Psalm 120 through Psalm 134, that most of these songs are listed as songs of ascents, because these were the songs that the Jews sung on their pilgrimages as they ascended up the mountains towards Jerusalem to partake of these three major Jewish feasts. If you pay attention to some of the words of these psalms, it really helps us to paint a picture of what was perhaps going on in the minds of some of these Jews as they made their pilgrimages. For example, in Psalm 121, I imagine that when their luggage got heavy, or perhaps when the road became rocky, I can imagine someone singing the first couple verses of Psalm 121 that says, "I will lift up my eyes to the mountains. From where shall my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth." Or perhaps while they were traveling, if there was murmuring or complaining that would start up among folks, I can imagine someone singing Psalm 133 and verse 1 that reminded them, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity." Taken together, all of these songs of ascent form a kind of catalog of a life of faith, and that they deal with issues that God's people have been struggling with for thousands of years. Issues like joy and hope and perseverance and humility. And this morning, what I want to do is I want to look at just one of these psalms together. Psalm 124 that Corey read this morning. Because though these psalms were sung by Jews in the Old Testament, they have abiding relevance for all of God's people of all time. Even today, these psalms can aid us in our own spiritual ascent. They can guide us in our lifelong journey of discipleship in Jesus Christ. Beginning again in Psalm 124, the first verse says, "Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, let Israel now say, had it not been the Lord who was on our side, when men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive. When their anger was kindled against us, then the waters would have engulfed us. The stream would have swept over our soul. Then the raging waters would have swept over our soul." You know, the first question that I want to propose about this psalm is why, in the midst of so much joy and gladness as they're traveling to Jerusalem and singing this song, why in the midst of so much joy and gladness would the people bring to their remembrance such hardships? I mean, they're headed to the temple of God to worship, to lift up prayers and to magnify His name. This is an opportunity to see family and friends that they haven't seen for a long time. So then why is it that they're remembering all of the bad stuff at such a time like this? Why bring up all the bitter experiences? It'd be like someone keeping a photo album of all the bad times. We just don't do that, do we? Here's a picture of my husband the day we found out he only had 6 months to live. We don't take pictures like that. Here's a picture of how I looked the day I lost my job. We don't do those kinds of things. We don't take pictures of events like these. We want our memories to be good ones and positive ones and memories that are lasting that we can capture. But here they're singing this psalm about men rising up against them with anger and wanting to swallow them alive as waters engulf them. So what gives? Why sing about things like this? Well, I'll tell you, it certainly wasn't to reopen old wounds from the past. It's to remind them of who got them through those trying times. And that is the Lord. Had it not been the Lord on the side of Israel, they wouldn't have even been alive to make the travel from their homes to Jerusalem to worship. We don't know the exact historical situation that gave rise to the composition of this psalm. It could be referring to the Exodus, when the Israelites had their backs against the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army of chariots approached. It could be talking about Gideon and his army of 300 men going up against the entire nation of Midian and the Amalekites when they should have been slaughtered. Or it could have been talking about the days of Jehoshaphat when Israel was surrounded by the Midianites, an army that was vastly larger and more superior to themselves. Think of all the stories that we could come up with in Israelite history where Israel should have been wiped out, but the Lord was on their side. Again, we don't know the exact historical situation which gave rise to this psalm, but I'll tell you, maybe that's to our advantage. Because the reputation of God and His deliverance is now so universalized that it can be personally applied to all of His faithful believers, just like you and me during our personal times of distress and danger. So inspiring and remarkable are the accounts of the Lord interceding for His people in the Bible that it even bears repeating. And that's what happens in this song. That's why the psalmist says, "Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, let Israel now say, had it not been the Lord who was on our side." You know, this is very similar to what we do when we are singing a hymn in worship and we've reached the end of the chorus and then the song leader just repeats the chorus because the chorus is so powerful and the words that are being sung are so powerful that it just bears repeating. Really, that should inspire us to repeat the things of God. That's why Paul said in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 13, "I believe, therefore I speak." And for a person who has that kind of faith and that kind of assurance in God, it's impossible to say something that God has done for you just one time and to be satisfied. If it had not been the Lord on Israel's side, they would have been swallowed alive and they would have been done for. And I tell you, talk about hindsight. Have you ever seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life? I imagine that's going to be playing on TV a good bit, if it's not already. But the character in the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, a guy by the name of George Bailey, he's played by Jimmy Stewart. In that movie, while he's preparing to end it all, standing on the bridge, an angel named Clarence appears to him to help. And Clarence shows George Bailey what life would have been like had he never been born. And he shows George that if it weren't for the work and the effort and the love that was exhibited towards the people of his town, the city would have been run by Potter, who was an evil man focused on a selfish agenda. And if George had never been born, many of his friends and his family members would have been dead or miserable or abused. So George Bailey is given the opportunity to see what life would have been like without him. And because of this revelation given by that angel, he is reminded that despite how he may have been feeling at the moment, he did indeed have a wonderful life. It's a very touching movie. But here's the point. Have you ever contemplated what it would be like in your life had it not been for the Lord? Now, ultimately, there would be no life had it not been for the Lord. But imagine what your personal life would be like if God were completely absent from it. Before I was a Christian, when I engaged in all kinds of corruptible behavior, I remember there were times I would be driving down the highway and I'd be thinking about some of the hijinks that I was up to. And I remember thinking, you know, if I get in a wreck and I die, I have no doubt that I'd go to hell. I remember thinking that about myself. And I believed it without a doubt. And it would have been nothing less than what I deserved. And then verses like 2 Peter 3 and verse 9 come to mind, which says, "The Lord is not slow about His promise, but is faithful towards you, not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance." And there have been times in my life where I've been so down in the dumps and depressed over something that I thought in my mind, you know, this is never going to get better. This is never going to end. My life, it might as well be over. Haven't you thought that before? And then we have assurances like in Psalm 34. In verse 17, that says, "The righteous cry, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." I mean, who else in here has been crushed by grief from the past, thinking that there was no way out? Nothing was ever going to get, it was never going to get better. Nothing was ever going to help you to get out of the troubles and travails you were experiencing. And yet here we are today, joyous and excited to be here and having moved on from all of that because the Lord was on our side, wasn't He? If it hadn't been for the Lord when I lost my job, if it hadn't been for the Lord when my mother died, if it hadn't been for the Lord when I was dealing with that addiction, if it hadn't been for the Lord when I was all alone, and the list goes on and on. I love Romans 8 and verse 31, which says, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us?" And what a rhetorical question. Had it not been for the Lord who was on our side. But let's look a little further at the nature of the kinds of conflicts that are described in Psalm 124. Look in verse 6 and 7 of Psalm 124. He says, "Blessed be the Lord who has not given us to be torn by their teeth. Our soul has escaped as a bird out of the snare of the fowler. The snare is broken and we have escaped." The picture here is of a trapper or a fowler, a hunter, laying a trap for a bird. And the bird sees the bait in that trap and he dives down, and so he gets caught in the trap. And if you've never seen a bird trap before, they can be very constrictive for the bird. That's, after all, the point. The bird is completely covered in a net with no room to spread her wings, and there's no attempt to escape because she can't escape. The bird is completely ensnared, and all it can do is wait for the fowler to return and completely take away his prey. And this right here is a picture that is very reminiscent of what we Christians encounter in life. Because that hunter called the devil is constantly looking to trap us. And the baits that he employs are numerous and they are clever. So clever that oftentimes we don't even recognize it. And so the picture of Psalm 124 is not only that God is on our side, but that he's constantly on our side and looking out for us even when the situation couldn't get more precarious and bleaker. And he's demonstrated this all throughout history. Again, I think about the Israelites as they're trapped by the Red Sea, completely blocked in, as herds of Egyptian carriages are closing in on them. Now, I think it's easy when I read the story, maybe this is the case for you too, that when we think about the Red Sea being parted and Israel escaping, you know, we have such a benefit of hindsight. But can you imagine being an Israelite and in that situation not knowing about what God was about to do? I mean, you're completely closed in. There's nothing you can do. You are trapped by the Red Sea. And here comes Pharaoh and his vastly superior army approaching you. And if they don't kill you, the slavery they were going to inflict on you is probably going to be far worse than what it was before. And I think about that, and I think we can sometimes lose the significance of what happened because we have the benefit of hindsight, but then just imagine standing there, and there's nothing, nowhere to go, and whoosh, God just separates those waters, and you're just like, whoa, you know, and it would have been an unbelievable sight to have seen something like that. Or imagine without the benefit of hindsight being Shadrach, Meshach, or Abednego in Daniel chapter 3. As you're being dragged to the entrance of that furnace, a furnace that is so hot that it just killed the guys who were supposed to be throwing you in the furnace because that's how hot it is. This is a situation with seemingly no rescue whatsoever. You're completely trapped. And God saved them by protecting them from the heat so much that Daniel 3 and verse 25 tells us that they walked around the fire. Or imagine being David and facing that 10-foot Goliath. I'm ashamed to say I had a lot more faith in that situation than I think that I would. I faced some bullies in my youth, man, but I ain't ever faced a 10-foot one. And that's exactly what he was doing. David had faith just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but I tell you, to the onlooker, seeing that little guy going against that giant, it looked like a hopeless situation in which the enemy would triumph. And yet, in all of these situations and more, when men and women were put in seemingly hopeless situations with their backs against the wall, that is when God rescued them, right then and there. You ever wondered why God let it get so far? Why did he let it get so far? I mean, why didn't he just stop the Egyptian army the moment they started putting on their battle gear and starting to mount their chariots, and then to pursue after the Israelites? Why didn't God just zap them right then and there? He already given them 10 plagues to try to make a point, and Pharaoh didn't get it. Why didn't God just zap them right then? Why did he let it get as far as he did? Or the moment Nebuchadnezzar gave the order for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be thrown in the furnace, why didn't God just stop it right then? Why did he let them take them? Why did he let them throw them in the furnace? Why did God wait until David challenged Goliath before defeating Goliath and the rest of the Philistines? What I'm saying is, why does God let it get as far as he does sometimes? I'll tell you exactly why. Because when things look at their worst, that's when God is at his best. And when things look tough, that's when God gets tougher. And when things couldn't look more bleak and things couldn't look more desperate, that's when we really see God's power manifest. And through that kind of manifestation, you know, that's the kind of thing worth being reminded of. And so when you look back on your life and at the tough times, and when the devil was seeking to hold you back and seeking to destroy you, and it didn't look like things could get any better or especially any worse, God was there, wasn't he? It wasn't as bad as we made it out to be. When the world was coming against you, when life was turned upside down, and perhaps you wondered if it was all worth it, God was there, wasn't He? And He was at His best. Even though we may have fallen, even though we may have failed, even though we may have messed up our lives and we're clueless as how to get it all fixed, God was there to deliver us from our mess. And the truth is, He's already delivered us when you think about it. He broke the shackles of sin. He loosed us from the claims of guilt. He paid our penalty. He gave us liberty. All of this through the blood of Jesus Christ. See, this isn't just a lesson for us to remember for the future when things go bad, and they will get bad. It's a reminder to us just as much as it was to the Jews as they ascended the mount to Jerusalem of what God had done for them in the past. Because, brethren, had it not been the Lord who was on our side, where would we be? Truly, He has rescued us when things couldn't have looked darker and bleaker in our lives. And then finally, let's look at verse 8 in Psalm 124. Psalm 124 and verse 8. Because here's really the nail in the coffin. He says in verse 8, "Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth." Our help doesn't come from our bank account. Our help doesn't come from where we live or what we drive. Our help doesn't come from the schools we attended. It certainly doesn't come from the Democrats or the Republicans. Our help doesn't come from that bottle of alcohol or that bottle of pills, from any man or woman, and our help doesn't come from what we think we know. Our help comes, as this psalm says, from the name of the Lord. And the name of the Lord doesn't merely imply authority, though it does imply that. It also implies reputation. This is important because most of the time when the phrase "the name of the Lord" is used in the Old Testament, as far as I've seen, it is used to imply the Lord's reputation and His character. What do you think of when you hear the name Nancy Reagan? What do you think of? Do you think about what she looked like? Or do you think about what she did? I think a lot of Nancy Reagan because I actually got to meet her one time when I was very young. And I think a lot of her. I think about her not just being the wife of one of the greatest presidents in our generation, but I think about her being the champion of the Just Say No campaign. But I know what she looks like, but I don't think about what she looks like. I think about who she was and what she did. Or what about the name Osama bin Laden? Dun, dun, dun. You know, that's not a very positive name. We don't think about even what he looks like, but we think about the opposite. We think about what he did. We think about 9-1-1. And we think about him being the murderer of thousands. You see, with a name comes reputation. Proverbs 22 and verse 1 says, "A good name is to be desired, more desired than great wealth." And here's the point. In Psalm 124, verse 8, when it says, "Our help is in the name of the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth," what that means is the Lord helps us because that is incumbent of His name. He is the maker of heaven and the earth, and therefore He is more than capable of aiding us in our times of distress. And this is where the idea of remembrance comes in and why remembering is so important and why I really think they sang this song and reminded themselves of all the things that the Lord had done in their various trials and distresses. This help we receive in the name of the Lord is worth remembering. And that's really what the Lord wants. Our God is a God of remembrance. He wants His people to remember what He has done for them, and He's constantly reminding them of what He's done for them. Exodus 20 and verse 2, before God gives the Ten Commandments, in Exodus 20 and verse 2, He says, "I am the Lord your God," and what else? "Who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." And this is a statement that's very common in the Old Testament. We see Exodus 22 verse 2 repeated all over the Old Testament. And then in the New Testament, when Jesus inaugurated the Lord's Supper, of which we participated in this morning. He left his disciples bread and the fruit of the vine and said, take this bread, take this cup, and partake of them in remembrance of me. In other words, remember. Remember who the Lord is. Remember his name and what he has done for them. I love the story in Joshua chapter 2 about Rahab. One of my favorite stories. Joshua 2, if you look in verse 8. Because Israel has sent spies and to spy out Jericho, and Rahab, this Gentile harlot, is here, and she receives these men into her home. And we read in Joshua 2 and verse 8 why she did. It says that before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen on us. And then all of the inhabitants of the land melt away before you, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt. Now stop right there. Did you notice what it was that she first remembered about the Lord? This is a Gentile harlot with no written revelation of God who risks her life by committing perjury. And the thing that she remembers about the Lord had happened 40 years prior, 40 years ago. And now 40 years later, as some Israelite spies come to her land, again, she risks her own life, committing perjury against her own nation of people. And she does so because she remembered something the Lord had done 40 years ago that put so much fear in her that she cared more about what the Lord thought of her than what her own people would do to her. You see the power of remembering? You see the power of something like Psalm 124 of remembering, had it not been the Lord? When I was in this situation, in this situation, in this situation, when it seemed like there was no way out, I'm completely trapped, if it had not been the Lord at that particular time, there's no telling where I would be. That's why Peter says in 2 Peter 1 and verse 13, I think it is right, as long as I am in this body, to stir you up by way of reminder. And brethren, that's a big part of why we're here. It's very possible that nothing this morning in Bible class or in the songs or even in this sermon has been anything new to you. Nothing innovative. But it's just as important to be reminded of the Lord's reputation and what he has done. Because it's in the name of the Lord that we find our strength and we find our perseverance to carry on. I don't know what everybody in here may be experiencing that may be hard on them. I don't know all the persecutions, all the trials, all the adversities that everybody is going in here. I know some. But all I know is that no matter how bleak it looks, and no matter how much it looks like your back is up against the wall and there's just no direction you could go to make this thing better, I know that it's during those times that God has proved in the past that he is the greatest. And that's the times when he has rescued his people. And so I encourage you not to give up hope, no matter what you may be experiencing. And if you're not a Christian, we want you to believe in the patience of the Lord, that he's not willing for anyone to perish, but for all to come to repentance. But we also want you to know that patience is not everlasting. And if you're not a Christian, the time to become one is now. And if you are a Christian and you're overburdened by sin, or you are struggling with something that you feel like there's no hope and there's no way to overcome it, and perhaps, you know, even this sermon hasn't encouraged you to seek the help that you need, just know that no matter how you feel, there's still truth. And the truth is that God has never abandoned his people. Never abandoned his people. And if we believe 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, that there's no temptation that's overtaken us but such as is common to man, and that he is faithful and will provide us the way of escape, I know there's a way of escape for you as well. We encourage you by way of invitation that if you have a need this morning, whatever that need may be, that you come forward and let us know so that we can help you while we stand and sing.